Well, we've now come to the main event. We had a very long introduction of Jenny last night. You can Google her and get pages and pages and pages of things to read about this amazing woman and her incredible career. Let me just say that in my decade, 15 years of knowing about Jenny, and at least 10 years knowing her personally, she's always been an advocate for the marginalized, for the oppressed, inside our faith and outside our faith. And I like to say, she's who I want to be when I grow up. So without any further ado, please give a warm welcome.
This is like a moving target thing because I'm trying to be him when I grow up, so.
I got math for that.
I do not know when it began, but you do. It began with a discontent, with a gnawing in your soul. It began with an out-of-placeness, or perhaps it began with an expansiveness that drove you to seek, to wonder. Perhaps it began with thoughtful inquiry. And it was a friend, an acquaintance, a colleague who was Christian, Jewish, Methodist, Muslim, a Buddhist stranger at your dentist's office, an unchurched but discerning woman in a book discussion group who said, wait, you sound like a Unitarian. And a member of this congregation or another said, come visit my church. And it was not an intrusion. It was a kindness. It was a courtesy because it helped you find your way home. No, I know you, you precious few. You grew up in this church. Your grandparents or great-grandparents or parents or children trusted this faith with what they held most dear in the world, the hearts, the minds, the very souls of the people that they love. And during all of your explorations, Unitarian Universalism was your church home. You may have left for a while when you were looking for your first job or going away to school or the military, but the odds are better that you never left at all, that your sense of belonging deepened throughout your life and through every transition. Now, I'm sorry, I know you. You searched on the web. You answered that survey on BeliefNet. You entered some magic combination of words, clicked the I feel lucky button, and Googled your way to this saving faith. See, I don't know when it began, but each and every one of you do. So I ask that you remember your own beginning and hold it within you for the rest of our time together this morning, because it is time to celebrate. We gather this morning in celebration of 115 years of religion woven from many strands, inscribed on our hearts and written in the gospel of universal salvation. A tradition that proclaims the good news that every single person has inherent worth. Even me, even you. Every individual has worth, and every individual can have a personal and direct relationship with the divine, not because they learned the right prayer or enacted the right ritual or made the right confession, but simply because they have a heart that beats, lungs that draw air, eyes that see, ears that hear, lips that can give witness. Each person everywhere has worth and dignity simply because they are. And each human life connects somehow with yours and mine. We know this. Sometimes we doubt it for a moment or a year or for 115 years, but still we know this. There's an entire world of people outside of this sanctuary, and we could never hope to meet even a small fraction of them. And yet you and I know in our bones that each person in that world has dignity. And each person has worth, because for us, it is a matter of faith. And we know that each person inside this sanctuary is also worthy. Now, sometimes it gets harder to affirm that inside the sanctuary. You know, he took too long getting ready this morning, and she forgot her purse. He gave me a hard time yesterday. I still haven't forgotten that snarky comment she made at a congregational meeting in 1998. You know, the folks we know best are sometimes the hardest to love well, because it's love in the concrete, not love in the abstract. I get up some mornings and I look in the mirror, and if there's an argument against inherent worth, I know I'm looking at her. Do you have days like that? Don't raise your hands. No, really. See, you may not always know that you are worthy, and I may not always know that I'm worthy, and yet we are. Every person in this room, every person in this room is a unique, totally unique and wonderful blessing in the world. We gather, friends, to celebrate a free faith that declares that every child, every youth, every woman, every man can be saved. Not just once, but again and again and again. Sometimes we hear about traditions where people are saved and we say, oh, we don't believe in that. Oh, yes, we do. We believe that salvation is always present, universal, almost ubiquitous. We are all saved, even me, even you. We're just saved more times than some other people are. See, we believe we can be saved in any moment. We gather this morning to worship, to open our hearts to wonder, to the feel of your neighbor's hand in yours, that look in the eye of someone you just greeted, to a memory summoned forth by a piece of music from our tradition, to the feelings in our bodies as we sing and sway. We open our hearts so that something precious, something holy can enter. And we might call that connection or community. Some would call it God or Holy Spirit or love. But it doesn't matter what we call it, because like Jell-O, it resists our effort to nail it to the wall and describe it. It reflects what we know of beauty and awe and wonder. And it is here because it is invited, because we come together and create a welcoming space. And what happens here is salvation. We gather to celebrate a lived faith, an embodied faith, a faith that we take out on the streets, a faith that declares a ministry for each and every one of us, every woman, every man. We are all called to wake up. We are summoned to a life religious. And none of us can afford to walk through life sound asleep, ignoring that call. All of us are called to be alert, to find and live our own ministry. Not just Eric David, all of us. All of us. Now, for some, answering that call does mean a life poured out in service in our Unitarian Universalist ministry. And in your 115 years, you've partnered with, I think, 27 specific ministers who've served you. You've also had a very powerful lay leadership here. But your most recent and current minister, of course, Reverend Eric David Carlson, who I do want to be if I grow up. Show him some love right now, if you would. He's a wonder, right? See, Eric and Harold Patterson and other ministers who have served you so well, who you have loved so well, all the clergy who have been with you for your 115 years, none of these folks have simply become ministers because they chose to be. You know, they didn't go to their high school guidance counselor and they said, I'm thinking ministry for you. They didn't go to their financial planner and hear, oh. Because there's clearly not in it for the money, although it's really good if you pay your clergy something. Please pay your clergy something. Like Kimberly, I'm a minister's partner. Please, please. No, ministry chooses people. People don't choose ministry. Ministry chooses people for religious leadership. It's a call so resonant that it can't be silenced. A call so strident that they can't ignore it any longer. Because I know of almost no one who says yes the first time they hear that call. They put it away. They go, oh, no, not me. Oh, yeah, you. Especially you. It's a call that comes to pound down their door, and it keeps pounding until they answer. So as a layperson, I am deeply grateful for our professional clergy, fine women and men called to minister to us in times of joy and times of sorrow, to comfort us when comfort is called for, to help us make sense of the unevenness and the tragedies of our lives, and to never fail to be touched themselves by human frailty and loss, to work very personally but always on behalf of what we all hold holy, and to bend our world towards justice. But ministry is so much more. For if we only see ministers as comforters, then you and I will become comforted and comfortable people. And if ministers only reassure, then all of us are so easily rocked into complacency. If ministers could do all of the work that was needed to build the better world that we proclaim, why then do you and I even have hearts and hands? See, there's a ministry for each of us. You know this is true because the leaders in these pews have practiced lay ministry for 115 years. Over a century ago, a group of incredibly good-looking people, have you noticed that about the photos? You all come from exceptionally nice-looking stock, okay? A group of fine-looking folks gathered to discuss a religious possibility. None of us was here. None of us inhabited that world. What was this world like in 1899? I'm always curious about where we started. Some of this might feel really familiar. It turns out that the prior year had been a record-breaking cold winter across the United States. It was called the Great Blizzard of 99. Snow fell from Montana to South Florida and knocked out the entire citrus crop in the southern United States entirely, and many other southern crops as well that they planted early. And as fall came in 1899, they were remembering that January there had not been a flake on the ground here. There had been less than half an inch of snow fall until February. And here in Stockton, overnight, 2.5 feet of snow fell. Okay? So yeah, don't be thinking this is cool right now, okay? Seriously. So, you know, everybody's looking backwards thinking, is it going to be as bad as it was? Those of you who grew up on some of those stories, the old days stories, the Little House on the Prairie stories, of somebody getting lost on the way out to the barn, that's from the blizzard of 1899. That's that year. So, you know, your folks are sitting around thinking, wow, it's time we hunker together, right? And they were listening to cool music. Music we might remember, like The Maple Leaf Rag by Scott Joplin that's featured in the movie The Sting, and Oh Solo Mio, and My Wild Irish Rose, but lesser known favorites like Come Home, Dewey, We Won't Do a Thing to You. The ever popular I'd Leave My Happy Home for You. And the Mosquito Parade March. We were embattled and we were intent on empire as a country, in part to find ways to feed our people. We wanted places where we knew it would never snow. So the Spanish-American War was just ending, which netted us Cuba, but we were already half a world away in the Philippines starting another war. We were inventive people in 1899. The first lawnmower was patented that year, and the same year the first golf association was formed in Southern California. What do you people do out there? Okay. Carnation had just figured out how to preserve milk in a can, which is a miracle because it meant that there was no need for every American family to live within 2 hours of a cow anymore. Seriously. Seriously. It meant that troops didn't have to take cows to battle. Right? These aren't little things. These are huge. Milk in a can. Wow. In May, the nation's first auto repair shop opened in Boston. 4 months later, Mr. Henry Bliss of New York forgot to look both ways before stepping off a streetcar and became the first person to be hit and killed by a car. Which might be the origin of the phrase, ignorance is bliss, but I'm not sure. In 1899, we were young and we wanted to live forever. We called the decade of the 1890s the gay 90s, which is just fine with me. We were concerned about increased urbanization, and we blamed that for the plight of our youth because we found ourselves setting up juvenile courts for the first time in places like Chicago. The Newsies of New York went out on strike, so the people in New York didn't hear about juvenile courts until weeks and months later. We weren't just young, we were young and restless. We had automobiles and motorcycles, and so we didn't just have hotels now, we needed motels, mobile hotels. And the Gideon Society was formed in 1899 to drop a Bible in every single one of those motel rooms. And they're still on mission, aren't they? There they go. See, 1899 was a lot like today, but a lot different. But if we drew that back that curtain and saw those good-looking, imaginative folks who gathered to start this church here in Stockton, we'd find that they looked more or less like you, because you're a good-looking lot as well, but with fewer zippers, because the zipper had just been invented and they weren't really using the clothing yet. So they were more buttoned down than we were. But they had many of the same motives and passions that you have. Their world, like ours, was in disarray. Their world, like ours, was a world of violence. And they wanted a place of civil discourse, a place to raise their children, a place where they could proclaim a better world coming and then work for that world. And most of the other preachers of that day were not at all interested in preaching a better future. They were preaching end times. Interesting, isn't it? Who was right? We're still here, so I think the end times folks, that didn't work out for them. But they don't necessarily know it. The people who started this congregation, those good-looking folk, wanted preaching and programs that would help them engage in ethical discussions about their society and their lives. I don't know if you caught it in the picture going by, but one of the earliest photographs of this congregation shows a banner hanging here, and it says on it, "Love never faileth." For 115 years, love has not failed here. And during all those years and the years since, the Unitarian Universalist Church of Stockton has been a beacon of hope for the Stockton area and a good neighbor for the other congregations, not just in Illinois, but beyond. Thousands of members, thousands of people have joined this marvelous adventure over that 115 years. It's mathematically not possible that it was a smaller number than thousands. Thousands of people. Wow. Feel them here with you because they're never far away. They're here. They live Universalism and Unitarian Universalism on their farms and in their offices, in all their workplaces, in their homes, in their volunteer lives. They put their values out front in the service of a better world. They stood for economic justice. They provided a place of tolerance and challenge, a sanctuary where members and friends and even visitors can share their deepest concerns and their most powerful hopes for the future. Feel the impact of those thousands of people, 115 years of people being a critical difference in the lives of members and friends and the life of this community. This congregation has made this part of Illinois more accepting, more tolerant, more compassionate, more caring. 115 years of work. And it's not easy here, I know that. This is not an easy time to be socially progressive in the Midwest, or most places actually, to be religiously liberal. I don't need to tell you this. The last couple of decades have been gruesome. You know, progressives were caught like a deer in the headlights 20 years ago when we first came up against an organized effort to repeal the entire 20th century and go right back to 1899. To return to a time when environmental destruction was just a cost of doing business. When women's rights were an afterthought if they were thought of at all. When children routinely lived in poverty. When racial differences were used to divide and punish. When countries like ours waged war on little or no pretext. Year upon year, human rights and personal freedoms have been degraded even more in our country, and we know that our planetary environment hovers on the edge of disaster. These are hard times, and there's so much to be done. The path is long and hard. Still, we strive with expectation, an expectation that our labors not only will make a difference, but have made a difference, that in this community that we would be even less were this congregation not here. Your commitment to doing the hard work has remained steadfast through all of your years. It's clear that this is a congregation that has a purpose. This group of pilgrims isn't here just to rest. You're here because you are driven by the part of our faith that reminds all of us that we are worthy. And you know that our lives are blessed in ways that other lives perhaps are not. Over the past 40 years, our American society has become more and more inequitable, not by accident, but by policy. We've cut critical social services that used to save lives and pull entire families out of poverty. We've cut scholarships and increased fees on student loans so that fewer people can go to school. We live in a land where we rob from the poor and give to the rich every single day. Every single day. The religious response, the faithful response to our country's illness is to work for justice, to try to balance the scales. Yes, this is hard work. The path is hard and long. But when the work is hard, remember, you're not alone. Feel those thousands of people who have been here in this church. They stand here with you. Feel them beside you as you work to bend the world back towards justice. And now feel 1,000 other Unitarian Universalist congregations reaching out to you this morning. They're right there too. They're here with you this morning. They're here with you every single morning. And please do yourselves a favor. April 17th through 19th is your regional UU family reunion, and it's going to be in Naperville. That's not that far away. All of your cousins from Kentucky and Minnesota and Wisconsin and Missouri and Michigan, folks like me, the whole Midwest, we're all going to be there. And when you see us all together, it's like a miracle. And it makes it much easier to remember that all those folks are with you every single week, every single Sunday, every single moment of your lives. It's your religious family reunion in 4 months, and I hope that a whole bunch of you climb into vans and go, because it will feed your souls and inspire your ministry. Remember, each of us has a ministry. Think of it as your own little piece of the world that you need to make whole. All of our ministries are worthy. The world is in desperate need of every ministry that embodies our values, every ministry that adds love and compassion to an apathetic, dispassionate world. Perhaps all this talk of ministry makes you worry that you're not sufficient to the ministry that is calling you. Don't worry. You'll be enough. See, you and I don't need to be extraordinary people. We can just be ordinary people who have an extraordinary faith. This is what Unitarian Universalists can create together. Together. Communities that invite us to pull up a chair, or a piece of carpet, or sit around a dinner table, or huddle in front of a fireplace or campfire, and tell our stories, share our lives, so that you and I remember that we are all immersed together in the human condition. Remember that this side of fear, we can find no rational reason to deny connection to each other, to the many others, to our brothers, our sisters, sons, daughters, cousins, all people. See, here's a secret. What's most precious about each of us is not how much we've learned from books or how smart or articulate we might be. And we believe in inherent worth, not net worth. So what's most precious about us is not how much we earn or where we work or where we live or how much time we spend organizing the clothes in our closets or our children's social lives. There's only one thing of really great value you can give me, one unique thing that only you can give me and only I can give you. We can tell each other the true stories of our lives. We can tell each other the things that have come only from us. Not our political positions, not the statements of misdirection we utter so no one will know how uprooted we feel, that, oh yeah, I'm doing fine, thanks. That part that doesn't tell how disconnected we are, that doesn't let anybody else know that sometimes late at night when everybody else is in the house is asleep, we cry and we can't even figure out why. No, not misdirection, not debate, not posturing. There is an ancient voice that knows your name, my friend, and it calls each of us to a far greater purpose, a far larger purpose. It calls you to speak truth, to talk true stories that come from the same place as the words that you whisper into the night air when you sit all alone under a star-filled sky. True stories come directly from your heart. So dare to say this to each other here. Speak truth to me so real that it calls me to listen to you authentically. It makes me stop and lean forward and listen deeply to you. And then listen to me the same way as I tell you my life, my truths, as I share the deepest yearnings of my soul. Because aside from church, there is almost nowhere else in the world that people talk this way right now. And then, settled in, souls speaking to souls in community. Dream of this. Groups of the faithful that gather as they have always gathered from history through today and onward, Sabbath after Sabbath, Sunday after Sunday, in hundreds and twos and scores and dozens and thousands, all of the numbers that have the same name, community. Community that gathers to share food and sing and dance. And did I say food? Yes, yeah, food. And hear stories. And did I mention potluck? And to share stories that remind us of how strong and solid we feel when we are together. Community invites new stories by embracing the people who have lived those stories and taking them seriously. Communities of care where we can always find solace when we are grieving or when we are afraid. And communities of challenge where we are encouraged not to stay the same, but to form ourselves so we can transform the world that is calling us. This is how we teach each other to minister. This is how we teach each other to love. We are a religious community bound together not because we believe the same thing, but because we promise to create and with our faithful presence maintain a holy space where we can speak truth to each other and ask questions that burn in each of our hearts. This is how ministries and the courage to say yes to them are found. Let us learn here to listen to each other so deeply and love each other so, so boldly that all of us can learn to listen to our hearts and find our own courage and transform the peace that is ours to make whole. Please join me in a spirit of prayer and meditation. Holy One, God who will never be constrained by human naming, the needs of our people are so vast that they numb us, and we are encouraged to hover on the edge of sleep, comforted by dreams of a world of peace where the work of justice, our work, has already been done. And we dream of a world with clean, flowing waters and clear air where the work of environmental stewardship, our work, has already been done. In that nighttime, we dream of a world where civil rights, including the right to marry, are already granted to all of our people, a world where the work of fighting homophobia and heterosexism, our work, has already been done. We dream at night of a world where no child fears abuse or fears reporting abuse or goes to bed hungry, where every single child is loved. A world where the work required to save the generations, our work, has already been done. We dream of a world where it is no longer acceptable to kill black men and boys and women for trivial transgressions that would earn most of us a small fine or 30 days in jail. We dream of a world where it is incomprehensible to justify killing children who are simply playing in a park, or shopping for a toy, or walking down a street. We dream of a world where the work of ending racism and violence, our work, has already been done. And God, we want to stay in that dream time, remain in that peaceful place just a bit longer. Remind us that the cover of night is not permanent, and that morning's light will reveal a world unchanged from when we went to sleep. Do not allow any of us to flinch from the sure knowledge that we are being called to our life's work and must awaken. Help each of us remember that as far as the eye can see and beyond, there is only one human family, one tribe. May we see each other completely, hear each other fully. May we learn to care so deeply for our neighbors here in Stockton that we invite them to be here with us, to be held and supported by this beloved church community. May we continue to make choices that are bold, choices of meaning, choices that help our congregation. And may we learn to be both brave and humble warriors for our faith, true companions to each other, full of patience and care, willing to speak and hear each other to courage for the next 115 years and the next and the next and the next. Because help us to know, God, that we will always find here in each other strength to add to our strength so that we may do the work that needs to be done here on earth. And fully awake now, may we find that the world we call ourselves to create together, based on our legacy of laughter and love, is so much more than anything any of us would ever have dared to dream alone. Amen.